right, folks, let me ask you the question. Does the public trust big pharmaceuticals? If not, why not? Well, top entertainment lawyer William Leibowitz has some definite ideas on that question, and he also presents a story of genius, and it all revolves around this in his book called Miracle Man, when a Dr. Austin can perhaps possess intelligence that can hurt big pharma, and what the consequences are all about. Hi, William. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you so much, Mary Jane. Pleasure to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
You know, just asking straight out, we want to trust big pharma because, I mean, I don't know anybody that isn't taking some kind of medication for some kind of condition or disease or whatever. You know, we want to trust them, but, you know, when you think about it, huge big pharma, why would they want to have cures for diseases? Because then they can't sell their pills anymore.
Well, that's exactly right, and I completely agree with you. And that, of course, is one of the big premises in the Miracle Man novel, that Bobby Austin, who's, you know, this incredible genius who decides to dedicate himself to finding cures, he really looks at the state of medicine, and he says to himself, gee whiz, in the last 50 years, what diseases have actually been cured? And I think that's true. The last one I can think of is polio back in the 1950s. And so what Bobby realizes is that big pharma doesn't want to cure diseases. They want to create treatments that they can sell again and again and again. And as we all know, so many people are on medicines, a lot of them very expensive, regimens that go on for months or years, sometimes life. But no diseases are getting cured. So Big Pharma decides that Bobby is public enemy number one as far as they're concerned.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, dermatologists and dentists, you know, very few die, but and they go on forever. We got to go to them. It's true, you know. And Big Pharma is making buco bucks. I mean, look at the fights that they have when their patent runs out.
Sure.
And anybody has a chance to go after that, you know, medication or whatever, they fight that tooth and nail.
Absolutely. And what's very disturbing is when you read in current events that the big pharma is inventing some new treatments, cancer treatments, whatever, and then you read that the cost will be $250,000 per patient per year, and the treatments have to go on for years, then, of course, the insurance companies don't want to pay for it. And you just listen to all of this and you say, well, what about cures so people don't have to keep taking expensive drugs? And what Bobby Austin in Miracle Man does is he actually cures diseases and thereby costs big pharma a lot of profits. And so that's why they are determined with a lot of machinations to go after him and stop him, and also use their political connections and lobbyists and affiliated politicians to also try to stop this guy who really is a godsend.
It is crazy. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I understand. It ain't cheap to do research.
Sure.
And it takes years and years and years before they even allow something to be in the market. I hate it when they give you a little teaser, you know, someplace in page 20, you know, of the newspaper. Oh, we've got this thing that's going to cure Alzheimer's. Of course, it's another 10 years down the line, maybe, you know.
Maybe.
Why even do that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you think about it, you even take something much more minor like the common cold. It seems hard to believe that in all of these decades, a cure or a vaccine for the cold could not have been invented. But then when you walk down your neighborhood pharmacy aisle and you see rows and rows of medications to treat the symptoms, and you realize that this represents tens of billions of dollars a year in revenue for these pharmaceutical companies, they don't want to cure the cold. Then people will go to their doctor, they'll get a shot, just like they do for polio, you know, and the aisles will be empty. So why would they possibly want to cure that? And I think the same analogy holds true with much more significant ailments.
Yeah, and overuse. I mean, you know, you go to your doctor and go, I got a sniffle, give me an antibiotic, you know.
Sure.
It's like, wait a minute, now we've got some diseases and conditions that are resilient to to antibiotics because we overuse them.
That's right. We overuse them, and so many things are overused. I mean, as I'm sure you read, the city of Chicago is suing a lot of the pharmaceutical companies for over-promoting prescription painkillers and not for informing public about the addictive nature of them. I mean, there's just a huge amount of money in that industry, and while they do some good, I would never say they don't, of course. Oh. The premise of the book is part of the drama and the action in it, and Bobby Austin is opposed by people other than Big Pharma, really does, I think, carry through a little bit in reality, because I have to think that if there was someone like Bobby Austin, this tremendous genius who was curing diseases, I think they would be after him because, you know, he would be costing them fortunes.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's absolutely true. And, I mean, when you look at it, you finally come down to, I've got a cold. I'll just eat some chicken soup. Period.
Yes. Exactly.
You know, it's kind of crazy after a while. And, I mean, I've done, you know, talk shows for 35 years, and believe me, William, I have heard just about every pill for about everything. And
sure.
Then you see the commercials on television. They don't even tell you what it's for. You're supposed to go to your doctor and ask if you need it. You know,
yes.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And then they give you the list of side effects, including death. Well, why would
I know.
Take it?
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. With all those commercials, most of the commercial, probably about 85% if you clocked it, are the disclaimers, you know? It's really, really funny, but I guess that's what they have to do. So when the class action lawsuits, you know, begin, they can play those in court. You know, look, we told everybody.
Yeah, we told them you could die, you know.
Yeah. it is crazy. But that was one of the themes in the book that I sort of wanted people to think about and all, because I really did just, it began to dawn on me one day, where are the cures? Where are the cures? It's wild.
Yeah. My dad, when I was growing up, he said, they'll never find a cure for everything. And I said, why? He says, well, as soon as you find a cure for something, there'll be something else so that, you know, the money will keep flowing. I'm going,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you hear, like you said, cancer. How long have they been researching cancer now? You would think we'd have something like Star Trek where they can just zap you with a tricorder and you're done, you know?
I know. And then you look at certain things, you know, some of the heart ailments and all. So many of the treatments, the high blood pressure, everything, it's geared to these long regimens. I was reading, and of course, in Miracle Man, it that's a little undercurrent in it, the drug statins, which so many people throughout the world take, and many take for many, many years. The drug companies have been lobbying to get them to be approved for preventative use, so fully healthy people should start taking them. Yeah, because it's a tremendous cash cow for them. Statins are, if not the most overall profitable drug worldwide, it's in the top five. And, you know, they're very quick to, you know, prescribe statins, as opposed to some proven homeopathic things that can have the same effect. It's a tremendous industry, and that provides a lot of the action in the book.
The other thing, too, and I don't know if you covered this in the book or not, but there were a lot of prescription drugs that are now over-the-counter drugs. They weren't allowed to be on the counter, and now people are buying them left and right, just as strong as when they were prescription.
I know. And some of them are, you know, milder things, maybe some allergy medicine, but that's true. And generally, when they become over-the-counter, they're still not that inexpensive for what they are. I know I'm very surprised sometimes when I buy certain over-the-counter allergy medicines, which I don't think are that complicated, or had tremendous R&D costs in the last 20 years. And you look at what you're paying, and you go like, wow, that's pretty hefty for an over-the-counter medicine.
Absolutely. Now, I've got to ask you straight out. here you're, you know, a practicing entertainment lawyer. You've represented numerous renowned recording artists and songwriters, producers, leading record companies, talent managers. I mean, you've done it all. Why write this book?
Well, I'll tell you why I wrote it, aside from the fact that I enjoyed writing it. A number of years ago, I began to think that something was going wrong with American society and the value systems in the country. And what I mean by that is that at one time, when people became famous and they became celebrities, it was for a reason, because they had a very special talent or had done something very notable, and that was part of the fabric of the value system of America, that you became famous and a celebrity because you actually did something constructive for society. And what I began to feel has happened in recent years is that that has been completely eroded, and what we have now are all these meritless celebrities who they sort of become famous for being famous or just doing outrageous or stupid things. Maybe it's reality TV that's created this phenomena, I don't know. So what I wanted to do with Miracle Man, I wanted to create a modern day superhero who was believable and actually had an extraordinary ability that he was using for society's benefit in a selfless way, and that he actually was anti-celebrity, meaning he purposely did not want his face to be known. He didn't want to be on posters or magazine covers. I sort of thought a hero like that would in some way be inspirational, in that it's so different from what we're inundated with every day. So creating this inspirational character was, I thought, something that hopefully people would appreciate and would find, you know, positive. And then there were, you know, other messages, shall we say, or undercurrents in the book that were important to me that I wanted to convey, once again, in the context of entertainment. And so it was for all those reasons that I really wanted to write the book, and I ultimately really enjoyed writing it.
And you know what? We do not support, the people who are the scientists, the people who have the genius to perhaps find cures. No, we give, and sorry about this, William, but they give millions and millions of dollars to somebody who throws a ball across the field or into a hoop, as opposed to someone who could find a cure for cancer. Doesn't that drive you crazy? It drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, you're right, but it's even worse than that because, okay, these sports stars, at least they have in that world a special ability. I agree with you that it's overcompensated. I agree with you. But the worst thing is when you look at how all these reality TV people are making huge fortunes and they can't even throw a ball. Most of them, it's insulting to people who work and try to achieve something, and people who you know lead productive lives, and yet they're on the front of every magazine cover. They're getting paid $20 million to let people take pictures of their weddings that last for 10 minutes. It's mm-hmm. That to me is just as low as you know we've
as
gone.
Yes, and you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Kardashians. What talent is there in the Kardashians? What is anything in the Kardashians other than doing stupid things?
Exactly. I mean, it began with, I think, Kim Kardashian being in some, you know, porno movie that was quote-unquote leaked or whatever. And then her mother has a tremendous talent as a promoter, a marketeer, and has taken, you know, her family and turned it into a multi-$100 million business when actually there's no one who's ever really done anything or has any talent. But the society we live in now rewards that. And so once again, in Miracle Man, I wanted to have a real contrast to that. And I think I've gotten such positive reaction on this character, Bobby Austin, because he's a complex character, he's a troubled character, but people love what he's doing and what he's trying to do and how selfless he is at tremendous price, because he has a lot of psychological issues and a lot of people opposing him in every way. But that's someone you can, you know, you can believe in. It's a real hero. And ironically, as I say, he does not want celebrity, which is refreshing in itself today.
You bet. And without a cape. You know, he doesn't have to have a cape or a special,
yes,
you know, ray gun or whatever. You know, he doesn't have to have any of that stuff. He has a brain, you know?
Yeah, and well, exactly, Mary Jane. The idea was, you know, I wanted to create a modern-day superhero, but someone believable in the sense that they can't fly, and you know, they're not Spider-Man and they're not Superman. They are blessed with an extraordinary intelligence, greater intelligence than has ever existed, but still they work extremely hard with that intelligence to do what they're doing. It's not like it comes to them easy. So it's really, it's that very concrete, important value that I think has dissipated over time in our country. And I think that's why readers are latching on to Bobby, because you want to believe in someone like that. And I've had an incredible reaction where certain people, they go, I love him. I'm rooting for him. Mm-hmm. We don't have real people like that, too many, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, we always laugh in this country and say we don't have royalty. Yeah, we do. It's just they're called rock musicians or actors or stupid people like the Kardashians. You know, that's our royalty. We really bow down to that royalty. And that bothers me a lot at times. I sit down and go, wait a minute, what about all these wonderful people who are like Austin, looking for cures and trying to help people and putting out the helping hand across the world to make a difference? No, we don't even care about them because they're not in the news, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right, and it goes deep, because we have had, for instance, it's been written a lot about a real brain drain in America, and not just America, the rest of the world, where the smartest people, instead of going to things that could help society, like medicine, biology, engineering, you know, real things to do things, they've gone to Wall Street, and they keep going. And for instance, MIT, it used to send people into meaningful careers. Now, because they're great at math, they all go to Wall Street to become what they call quantitative analysts. Caltech, the same thing. The smartest people, they don't go to medical school. At one time, they went to medical school. No, they don't go to medical school. They go to Wall Street. And so that the reason for that, I think, is because our value system has become eroded, where the dollar is all holy. It doesn't matter how you made your money. It's just how much of it do you have. And that has become a societal epidemic. And I think it really has affected things. I know when I was growing up, and I would be at like cocktail parties, you know, and I was just, you know, a teenager, a kid, you know, listening. You would see respect given to people who were surgeons. You know, someone would walk in and, you know, my father would whisper, oh, he's a surgeon. And it was like, oh, wow. And, you know, someone, oh, he's a professor. Now, oh, that person, she's a head nurse. And that was important. And then when someone walked in, what does he do? Oh, it'd be, oh, he's a stockbroker. Like, well, that doesn't matter, you know. Now it's the reverse. Someone walks, oh, he's a hedge fund guy. And if someone walks in, oh, he's a professor, I've actually heard people go, oh, they don't make any money.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. A society pays for an erosion of values ultimately. And I think that's what's going on. And as I say, one of the reasons I wrote this book within an entertainment context is to get people thinking about things like that. Here's a guy, Bobby Austin, who could become one of the richest guys on the face of the earth, inventing drugs, getting patents, or just using his incredible intelligence in any field, right? Mm-hmm. But he doesn't do that. He is selfless, and he's using his gifts for real societal values. That's like a lost art for most people.
It is. Well, when I went to, Indiana University and, worked on my bachelor's and master's and PhD, I went because you went for the sake of education so that you can expand mm-hmm. your mind. Not necessarily that I was going to make big bucks when I got out of there. Now it's
right.
completely different. They go, well, I'm going to get an MBA. Why? Because I want to make big money. Well, that and then you find out how miserable they are later in life. It's crazy.
Sure. Often because they really haven't contributed anything, and they've squandered their time and their talents and all. And then another theme in the book that I think rings true is how certain forces, political forces and all that, often align with the big money industry groups like Big Pharma to ultimately oppose someone like Bobby Austin, even when he's a godsend. The money interests and the influence they have on our political system can create issues that shouldn't be there, and that is an undercurrent as part of the drama and the action in the book too. And I think that's a very real problem.
That's because those politicians want to get reelected. And just
yep.
providing some of that money for the re-election.
Exactly right. Exactly. And they have to buy all their TV time and everything, and they need the money, and these companies provide it for a quid pro quo.
So I guess there are consequences, especially social and political consequences, if you have a high level of genius. Look out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the interesting things is that, early in Bobby's life, the government finds out about his special abilities because his parents take him to psychologists because he has certain psychological issues, and that yields a lot of testing, and ultimately he comes to the attention of a imaginary government agency that I made up called the Office of Special Strategic Intelligence Services, and their job is to identify extraordinary intelligence in children and ultimately to mentor that and sort of corral it into certain fields because they view great intelligence as a national asset. The interesting thing with that is that when Bobby reaches a point in his life where he doesn't want to become the intelligence weapon that the government had wanted him to, he falls out badly with them. And I think that kind of thing also is very realistic because genius can often be manipulated and directed into channels that aren't necessarily what is really the best for society. Luckily, he resists that and rebels against it, but he was really destined to be into aerospace and military applications.
Sure. Now, have you ever thought a movie out of this? I mean, this sounds like a movie made immediately, a big screen movie.
Well, thank you. That's been a very a common reaction I've gotten from many readers, and I agree. I think it would be a great movie because it has a lot of really interesting cinematic characters and a lot of action and plots.
And it's a message too.
Yes, I'm just hoping someone in Hollywood is listening and will pick up a copy of the book and say, wow, let me check this out. But I have gotten a lot of response like that, and I'm hoping that that maybe the book gets a little bit of notice for that.
Oh, absolutely. And you have a message, and it's not necessarily a pretty message, but it's one that is reality. It's happening. It's happening right before our eyes, and we're letting it happen.
No, absolutely. And the other message I sort of wanted to convey in the book is that, the sanctity of human life, because Bobby had extremely tragic beginnings in life, almost didn't make it. And when we listen to the news and all, we always hear so many numbers about this number of people died, this number of people starved, this war, that war. And something I began to think about some years ago when I was getting the idea for Miracle Man, I said, gee, these are numbers, but maybe one of those people who just died or starved, maybe they had an extraordinary ability that could have changed the whole world for the better, and now that's lost,
yep.
You know? And that is part of the Miracle Man story. I think it's the kind of thing, as people read the book, they could think, gee whiz, what if this guy had died as rightfully he should have when he was a child? So there are a lot of messages, once again, all in an entertainment context, but I think it gets people thinking and is a little bit provocative in that way.
And wouldn't that be novel? To think.
A novel.
Absolutely. Now, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. MiracleManBook.com. And on the website, there's a video people can see. They can read the reviews, get a synopsis of the book. So I think that could be interesting, MiracleManBook.com. And in terms of buying the book, it's on Amazon and paperback and ebook and also Nook and iBook and all of that. But the website really, I think, gives people a real flavor.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to the next endeavor and keep up the good work, William. We need to be reminded over and over again.
Mary Jane, thank you so much for having me and for sharing this with me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Keep me posted, okay?
I will. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now. That's
bye-bye.
William Leibowitz. And it's Leibowitz, William Leibowitz, called Miracle Man. And you can go to his website, which is MiracleManBook.com. And the truth, hopefully, will out.